This is Health Unabashed, broadcasting live from HIMSS 2024 in Orlando, Florida, on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm Greg Masters, co-host and executive producer, and I'm joined by the digital health aficionado himself, author, editor, global thought leader, and in his executive capacity, steward servant, Gil Bash. On today's menu, we are in the company of Dr. Eyal Zimlickman, the Chief Transformation Officer and Chief Innovation Officer at Sheba Medical Center, who also serves as the Director and Founder of the ARC Center for Digital Innovation at Sheba Medical Center. So with no further delay, Gil, the mic is yours.
Greg, I want to thank you. Here we are live from HIMSS 2024, right in Orlando, one of the biggest meetings for health information in the world. And obviously, we have some of the top people in the world who are really at the forefront of health information. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to sit in on one of those presentations, a great presentation, that really speaks to a theme I believe in so strongly, which is access to care, and particularly right now, access to mental health. And I saw an incredible presentation. I was able to jump up and grab the presenter, Dr. Eyal Zimlickman, from Sheba Medical Center, actually one of the 9 best medical centers in the world. I think it's also been ranked by Newsweek and other national and global publications as one of the best. It's also in the Middle East, I think the largest regional center in the Middle East. And yesterday, Eyal, Dr. Zimlickman, was presenting on a critical topic, which is AI, augmented intelligence, in the use of course, mental health care. And Eyal, it's wonderful to have you to the program. You're the Chief Transformation and Innovation Officer at Sheba. I know you quipped, transformation is hard, innovation is fun. It's a little bit like being a futurist when you're dealing with innovation. It's in the future. And the future ain't what it used to be, as Yogi Berra once said. But you're dealing with very practical issues day in and day out. And I noticed that yesterday you talked about the weave of wearables, technology, and something that I thought was groundbreaking. We're going to talk a lot about your work in our conversation. But one of the things you talked about, which is, I think, revolutionary in terms of your perspective of use of information and technology, was the concept of inpatient care for mental health at home. And I wondered, with your background, you are a internist, you're committed to the practice of medicine, you're an innovator in your own right, you're creating globally incubator centers around the world, not just for the purpose of sourcing new technologies, but actually as a social impact movement. You and Sheba, through this organization you call ARC, you're actually building these ARC centers in areas around the world that really need, as we say, investment in STEM. You're just changing the face of how innovation should act as a socially responsible leader. So there's a lot to unbundle right here. I wish we could take just one of those topics. But I wanted to start first and foremost with your presentation yesterday. It was illuminating. AI, wearables, remote patient monitoring, people who have significant mental health challenge who normally would be in an inpatient center are being treated at home. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy behind that and why.
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Gil, for having me on the show. It's very important for us to get this message out there. And let me start with a couple of words about what ARC is doing and why it's so important for us to take transformation forward on a global scale. Because as you know, healthcare has so many challenges that are almost existential for us in terms of really being able to provide a high level of care to a maximum number of patients around the world. And ARC is dedicated to having innovation drive these transformations on a global level, but also, as you've hinted towards that, serve as an economic engine of growth for populations, for communities, through bringing in science to the young population, creating startup companies, bringing foreign investments, and really kickstarting the economy in many locations around the world. And we've been doing this in almost 15 countries over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's the first time. Look, I'm exposed to major hospital systems all around the world, and it's the first time I've heard of a hospital system taking health global in a way that understands that health is not just about the discovery of new medicines or therapies, providing care. It's also dealing with the economics of a community that is hard pressed. So I want to congratulate you for that. I think that in terms of social impact, I think Sheba Medical Center has gone above and beyond. It's fascinating, and I know it's not just in the United States where we are right now, but I know you're in Australia and other nations in the world, and the plan is to continue to place ARC centers in different capitals of the world, different major cities of the world, in order to help the people and actually encourage them to pursue careers in the sciences.
Right. Thank you for that. And you know, going back to your question around mental health and specifically the hospital at home, so we firmly believe that healthcare needs to move out of the hospitals for many, many reasons. One of them is that, you know, it's not economically sustainable. We cannot continue to have patients come to hospitals. Hospitals are the most expensive of anything that happens in the healthcare systems. We also are very focused on patients as much as we need to be. And when we talk about where care needs to happen and being able to really treat in our own environments, much more patient-centric. And we've done this with general medicine hospitalizations for a couple of years. We decided to raise the bar and move this to where a space where I think there's even greater need, and that is mental health. And we all understand and know the challenges of mental health, especially on the very highly acute patients, sometimes that come knocking on our doors in emergency departments with a crisis, a mental crisis.
Well, often that's what ER. These patients often appear at the ER.
And then they end up in the hospital sometimes for 3-4 weeks of hospitalizations. We think that that period of time needs to happen at their own space where that is possible. And we've built this program under the leadership of Dr. Asaf Kaspi from Sheba over the last couple of years to really be able to tend to patients with high acuity, even patients that no one else around the world would even think about having them stay at home, because we've built the guardrails and the digital envelope to allow this to happen, so that we feel very secure, we feel very confident that we know what's going on with those patients, and we can react in time if there's deterioration and actually have them come in, if we have to the actual hospital. And this has been going on for a couple of years, working with some of the HMOs in Israel. We have a payment model we've built around it, because as you know, if you haven't built the payment model, it stays very
Nothing
theoretical,
happens.
Right?
Nothing happens in medicine.
Right, and this has been working out as well, and we presented some results yesterday during the
You also talked about augmented intelligence, AI. How does that fit into this program for mental health?
So one of the major issues we have in mental health is access. You know, we have good clinicians, but we don't have enough of them. And this gap is actually going to grow. COVID and the pandemic has not really helped with the workforce issues, you know, around healthcare. But of course, mental health is one of the areas that suffers the most, and we see this gap growing. So as we think about how do we provide access to high-level mental services to patients around the world, and patients with mental health issues, the numbers are huge. We're talking 1 of 5 around the developed world, and probably higher numbers in the developing world. How do we answer to this huge need? How do we triage? How do we diagnose who needs immediate treatment and who we can wait with treatment, or maybe have digital therapeutics approach to those patients? We need to really rely on information technology. We need to rely on augmented intelligence or artificial intelligence. And this is where Gen AI, like in many other areas, offers a possibility for a true transformation that would drive increased value in for these types of patients.
You said something yesterday that I thought was so practical and yet so illuminating. I asked the question during the session, what about group therapy? Because I know that people who are inpatient, also part of the program is actually talking about what's going on in the group that they're sort of paired to in the mental health setting. And you said something that I think is so obvious, but not, which is we're living in a world where we're communicating online all the time. Young people, I notice, are communicating. They're playing games with people, you know, Dungeons and Dragons across the nation, across the world with people who they don't know, and they're talking about things that are important to them while they're playing this game. And so I realized when you said that, that's so common sense that people use the virtual world. And I'm wondering how that blend of both in-home and virtual is used. And then you talked about also using commonplace technologies, just like Zoom as a platform and so forth. Talk about the blend of the thinking here, because what I loved about what you're doing, and I love about the use of technology and your mention of AI, is you're not talking about the future. You're talking about how technologies we have right now could be used to accelerate access to care right now. And I thought that was like, huh? It's so practical and common sense, and yet here we are. You had a solo presentation at HIMSS, the world's largest meeting of health information professionals dealing with the health system all around the world. You get a solo spot for 1 hour to talk about this program. And I think as someone who's very familiar with health information and mental health issues, I was like, this is just so practical. And now, and we talk about these technologies, wearables, augmented intelligence, even augmented reality, as if they're off in the future. So that's, I imagine, the blend of your transformation meets innovation.
Right, right. And, you know, we have those tools. You know, the technology for much of this already exists. It's about bringing it together with the connectivity that we see as the major challenge. You know, take Fitbit or similar devices that measure your sleep. You know, it's not 100% accurate. Measure your number of steps a day. These are vital signs for us to really understand how the body is reacting to whether it is an acute disease, a chronic disease, a medication we've started, a therapy we've started. We need to better understand how that is working. We have a program right now we've launched this year with the number one telecommunication company in Israel to build the smart home environment that's able to really improve our wellness, our well-being, our reaction to chronic disease and acute disease, aging in place, because the home environment is the future environment. We'd like to stay in our own home, but the home needs to support the health and wellness needs of the individual. Our aim is to use sensors that cost only $50 to turn any home into a smart home. This is what I say to my team. If this is going to cost $1,000, it's not going to fly, because this needs to be on a very large scale. But if it's $50, then states and municipalities around the world will start investing this in people's in homes to make sure we're healthier, we're able to age in our in a safe environment using only $50. This is where we need to go, and this is what we're actually now building at Chiba as a model and building the evidence to make sure that the whole world can take this and implement broadly.
Now, you're also doing a lot of research about this mental health at home program. And here you have these dual tasks, transformation and innovation. Transformation, you said yesterday, and I quote you, transformation is hard. Innovation is fun. But the medical system needs to go through some form of economic and procedural transformation. How is it at Chiba, you and your colleagues are able to marshal this sense of the future of healing is at home? In the United States, we're reaching about 19% of GDP is directed toward health. It's the highest in the world. Israel, I think, is about 7.5% GDP, and you're living 10 years longer than we are here in the States. So obviously, you're spending less per capita, you're getting more return on investment. How do you work through the cultural changes? Because you seem to have a crew of people that surround you that are pushing the envelope in terms of how do we improve care, increase access, reduce costs, and keep people healthier longer.
Well, first of all, it always needs to start with leadership. You know, leadership needs to buy into this, to understand that this is the way to move forward. Sometimes on the short term, we're going to spend more money, but really we need to make the right steps so that on the long term, we're able to reach our goals. And so after you get the leadership sorted, the next is finding the champions on the ground to create a culture change. And there are always champions on the ground. You need to find them and you need to start to creating evidence, start creating success stories, which is exactly what we've done. I mentioned one name already, Dr. Asaf Kaspi, who's one of our psychiatrists, a leading psychiatrist in terms of really thinking out of the box and where we need to be going. Once you realize you have those individuals and you're able to support them as the leadership, you're able to support them and allow them to move forward if you think that this is the right approach, you create that evidence, you create the success stories that allow you to slowly ramp this up. And then through ARC, we're looking for what we call like-minded organizations who are the organizations around the world? And when you start thinking globally, it's actually much easier, because if you only think locally, it's tough to find like-minded organizations. But if you're looking at the entire world as your playground, then it's easy to find like-minded organizations in different countries and start with them, and they look to change just the way that you're doing this, and you share those best practices and the evidence that you've created to really take this up across the world. We've started only 5 years ago with ARC. The last ARC summit, which is our get-together in Tel Aviv, which we do every June, brought 1,500 people from across the world, from ARC organizations that are coming to listen and share stories on how to do this on a large scale. And this is really taken off in an increasing pace.
Just dropping in, you're right on time for Health Unabashed on Healthcare Now Radio. Today we're chatting with Dr. Eyal Zinman, the Chief Transformation Officer and Chief Innovation Officer at Sheba Medical Center and the Director and Founder of ARC Innovation. Stay tuned for the rest of the story.
You know, I had the pleasure of attending the ARC groundbreaking in Jersey City, New Jersey. Obviously, you had members of government there. The governor was there. Your vision is to actually have people from Elizabeth and Newark and the surrounding cities who may not have exposure to the sciences to come and visit ARC and Liberty Science Center together. How difficult was it to get everybody to say, yes, let's do this together. Let's have ARC establish a center of innovation right here in Jersey City. Was that hard?
So, you know, first of all, I want to really praise our partners, Liberty Science Center and Paul Hoffman, who's the CEO. You know, it was their vision to bring together STEM, healthy living, and the industry in healthcare together. And this is what the project that's called SciTech City. We were introduced because somebody thought that we are very like-minded, and you know, we hit it right off, and we became the healthcare partner of SciTech City, and we're launching an ARC site on grounds in the new building, Edgeworks, that's now starting construction. We're getting the top floor with the amazing view, as you've said, out to the skyline of Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty right there. And the idea is exactly as you've said it. The idea is to match everything together, to bring the cutting-edge startup companies from ARC around the world, not just Israel, but around the world, from Berlin, from Melbourne, from London, from France, many other places that we have our ARC centers, from Canada, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto, to converge in that place, but then have the young children, the school that's being built there for science and technology education, really be a part of this, see what we could achieve through innovation entrepreneurship. How can a young kid with an idea make that idea a reality through startups, through entrepreneurship, raise money and change the world? We have examples of companies we've launched through ARC that have been doing this, that are saving hundreds of thousands of patients around the world through AI. A company, for example, like ADOC, that was the first company to actually get an FDA approval for AI in radiology, to read CT scans in an emergency room and identify very quickly life-threatening conditions such as stroke. We've just published a study that has shown that using artificial intelligence was able to reduce mortality by 30% in the emergency department. Now, this technology is now implemented in 1,200 hospitals around the world. Multiply the numbers of 30% times the population that sees this technology, and you get really the global impact, the tikkun olam in many ways, where healthcare and where ARC can be going.
You know, I know that Sheba is working globally in terms of making technology that allows neonatal screening, handheld screening possible. That could radically change how we provide OBGYN care in rural America. We have 28% of our people here in rural America live 2 hours or longer from a tertiary care center. Sheba Medical Center innovated at the time of COVID-19, the height, which is actually, we're celebrating our 3-year anniversary this week of shutdowns with COVID. And Sheba went into full mode combining technology and care. And I remember reading about the fact that Sheba was sending people to visit people who had COVID at their homes so that they weren't coming into medical centers. You know, obviously taking the physical risk of health providers, but trying to contain this virus. I mean, so obviously, somehow or another, Sheba is a center of complete innovation. I know that during the earthquake in Turkey also, Sheba airlifted huge medical teams, Turkey, Ukraine, other Haiti, other nations of conflict. How is it that the culture of Sheba, I almost feel like to get into be a staff clinician at Sheba, it's not the practice of medicine, it's a lifestyle. Am I over exaggerating this, or do people sort of say, yeah, I know I'm working at Yichilov Medical Center, but I really aspire to work at Sheba. Is there a little bit of that?
So Sheba has a different mentality, in different aim. We're not just looking at our own population, which of course is top of mind, but we're looking at the world. We see the world as our responsibility. And, you know, some would say, you know, chutzpah even, to even think that one medical center could have such an impact. But we were able again and again and again to show that we can actually create large-scale impact. You mentioned Ukraine. We were the first hospital to actually mount and build a field hospital in Ukraine, on the land of Ukraine, not in the bordering countries, which many others have done. Exactly. We went into Ukraine. We went into air shelters when there were sirens going on in Ukraine under Russian attack at the time. Not only through the staff we had on the ground, which is always a limited number that you could actually bring, but also through telemedicine. And this is where innovation comes into play again at Sheba. Sheba has launched, coming out of the first wave of COVID, as we launched our virtual hospital called Sheba Beyond. And Sheba Beyond set up shop inside this hospital in Ukraine, bringing the whole of Sheba clinician power from Israel through telemedicine to Ukraine through these tents we had there on the ground. And this offers a lot of possibilities to bring the highest level of care to the most remote and dangerous places in the world, disease or disaster-stricken places. And I'll say something else most of the public is not aware. On day-to-day times, we are utilizing telemedicine to help treat patients in the Palestinian Authority. Of course, there's a war raging right now in Gaza. But when we talk at times of outside of war, we've been doing this. We're doing this on a day-to-day basis. We treat a Palestinian woman, for example, who have high-risk pregnancy. Through telemedicine, we support these programs into the West Bank, and that allows us the power again.
Yeah, I don't think that people have a strong enough appreciation for the commitment to healing and to put aside flag, faith, and political perspectives. Obviously, no, I won't go into it, but I know that even some of the people at the height of the conflict on the side of the Palestinians or this terrorist organization were treated at Sheba for very serious conditions like brain cancer, and successfully. And Sheba has always stepped to the plate. And that's, I think, a credit to the fact that you're a world-class medical system. Just returning a little bit to the presentation you made yesterday, which was, again, phenomenal. And I certainly hope that we can share some of that presentation with the readers on Medical Life. But the concept also of pediatric care I asked you about, that's the next wave. I know, obviously, taking a child who may have suicide ideation and bringing them inpatient, there are other concerns of that. And I know that you and your colleagues are grappling with that. What are some of the medical considerations you have to consider as you're looking at the use of technology, which gives you that ability to heal at home? And on the other hand, we understand that not bringing that child in to a place where they can be watched 24/7 has its own risk. How do you make the sort of like that judgment call of, let's put that person in the remote mental health program, heal at home, and not put them in the inpatient program? What's the sort of the weighty decision or protocol on that one?
Right. So specifically with treating mental health children and inpatient services, you know, Sheba is one of the leading hospitals in the world. We've built a whole a new ward for children who need hospitalization, which is built completely different than what we would expect, sorry, to see an inpatient ward in psychiatry. It's really geared up towards children. But this is just the beginning, because children are the first ones that would need to shift treatment to the home. They need to be in their environment. They need to be with their family members. They need to be with their parents. This is the right environment for them. The way to do this in a safe way is to have two very important facts here. One is to be able to really, using data, to predict better which patient would react favorably to this setting versus which patient we might have an adverse event or, you know, somebody committing suicide, for example. So with data, we'll be able to better predict who fits this type of model and what the future will be like.
So it's very careful screening and selection that goes on.
And of course, the other issue here is being able, through digital means, and we talked a little bit about this before, being able to look at that patient, whether it's a child or an adult, and really monitor and understand exactly what's going on in this part of time, and be able to respond quickly if the condition changes. If you're able to respond quickly, then you have that that sense of safety that you can always pull them into the right environment if that is required.
You know what I'm thinking about also in terms of this is this heal at home perspective actually reduces the stigma. I think that in some cases, if it's possible, sometimes the family knows that the person, the family member, whether it's a parent or a sibling, needs to be in a healing setting, a mental health inpatient setting, and yet the inpatient aspect of it is so overwhelming to them that they may hold back and try to keep that person at home when they really need to be in therapy desperately. And I'm wondering, I'd love to see as you, I know you're studying this, you shared some data, I know that you're protecting it for publication, so I obviously want to be sensitive to the proprietary aspect of the work you're doing. But I think I will be fascinated if you're able to interview the families in terms of, did this reduce the stigma element and sort of drive them to seek as a family unit, you know, therapy for that person? I think that the change in terms of public health could be radical. Now, I know that you come to the States every year and you teach at Harvard. Can you tell me a little bit about, are you teaching them about hospital system transformation? Are you teaching them about innovation? Or are you just going back to your medical roots as internal medicine and doing that?
So it's basically more on the innovation, transformation, entrepreneurship side. I went through a program at Harvard, at the School of Public Health, specifically for healthcare executive, a mid-career Master of Science program, and I come back to teach that program. These are young doctors, typically in their mid-career, that are looking to move from the clinical world to the managerial roles. And I think entrepreneurship and transformation is key for these doctors to really be able to kick off this transformation we're looking to happen on a global scale.
Eyal, it's been a thrill to have you on the program. I want to thank you. Again, congratulations on an outstanding presentation yesterday at HIMSS. We're recording this segment of Health Unabashed live here at HIMSS on the floor, so you hear a little bit of background. I want to thank you so much for being part of this today. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil, for bringing this forward. Thank you.
And that, dear listeners, is the last note for today's melody. A huge thank you for our worldwide listeners for tuning in, and a tip of the hat to our guest, Dr. Eyal Zimlickman, Chief Transformation Officer and Chief Innovation Officer at Sheba Medical Center and the director and founder of ARC Innovation. Do follow his work on the web at the ARC Center for Digital Innovation at Sheba Medical Center via www.shebaonline.org. Health Unabashed streams live 3 times a week on Healthcare Now Radio, Monday through Friday at 10:30 a.m., 6:30 p.m., and 2:30 a.m. Eastern, and that's 7:30 a.m., 6:30 p.m., and 11:30 p.m. Pacific. Stay social with Gil and me on Twitter via @Gil_Bash, and that's B-A-S-H-E, and Greg Masters, M-P-H, and that is Greg with 2 G's. And don't forget to give your tweet some zing with our hashtag, Health Unabashed. Until we meet again, pursue your passion for better health and with no apologies.